And now, the continuing adventures of Superhero Speak, episode 32. Hey everyone, quick shout out to Metal Geeks Podcast. They're a fellow podcast who is run by two metalheads, and every week they geek out on comic books, video games, movies, what have you. They have some really great guests, and it's pretty cool. If you like this podcast, you'll definitely dig Metal Geeks Podcast. You can find them at metalgeekspodbean.com. But you can also find them on Rhymes with Geek, where you can find us also every week. So that's another great site, rhymeswithgeek.com. You guys, if you're not following us through there, you should check it out because you'll find a lot of other great comic book related podcasts there. So check it out, and don't forget, check out Metal Geeks at metalgeeks.podbean.com. This episode is John and I sitting down with Eli Schwab. Eli is a comic book writer and artist, and he's also the host of Cosmic Lion Radio Podcast. It's a really cool podcast that he told me about when I met him, and I checked it out, and if you love music, you should be listening to this podcast. It's really, really cool. So you can check that out at CosmicLionProductions.com. But yeah, we had a lot of fun with this interview. We talked about music, comics, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and our mutual love of Greg Horn. So sit back and enjoy, and here we go. Hey everyone, and welcome to Superhero Speak. I'm your host, Dave.
And this is John.
And this week we have a guest with us. He is the brain behind Cosmic Lion Productions. He does a mini comic and hosts a very cool podcast. Everyone, welcome Eli Schwab to the show.
All right. That's me.
Yes, that's you.
That's okay. We insert the cheering crowds later in post-production.
Yes, we do. Okay.
Well, guys, I'm honored to be here. Thanks again for having me, and thanks for telling me that I have brains. That means a lot.
Well, it's actually a cool concept, the podcast and the comic. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the whole thing?
Okay, well, as you said, I am the brains behind Cosmic Lion Productions. And what Cosmic Lion Productions is not only comics and podcasts, but it's basically everything that I get into. So not only do I do those two things, but I also put on live concerts and try to put together live events. Now, I haven't done as much of that recently, but I used to live up in Burlington, Vermont, and I used to put on a lot of live music events up there, and I would always have some sort of live art, and I would always have comics involved in the process. So I always, try to get different things going on. And so what I do right now is mostly the comic and the podcast. Now, the comic just came from me going to a record store recently and picking up a small little mini comic. And my girlfriend and I were looking at it, and we're like, what the hell is this? Like, this can so easily be done, and I'm just, like, sleeping on making a little mini comic. I have it right here. It's called
Okay.
It's one of the – I hate to judge now, and I respect this person's art, but it is terrible. And like, the centerfold is a pencil drawing of a bumblebee. Okay. And he has a baseball hat on to the side. It says swag. And it's like pointing to his butt. It's pointing to all these different places. And all the labels are swag, 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 swag.
You just lost me. Swag.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. It's terrible. It was terrible. So that inspired me to like get going. And so that night I was like, I'm not going to bed today until I have a mini comic. And so I have like a portfolio of my drawings, like, just art that I've done over like the past 10 years that is basically doing nothing. And so I went through it and I found all these really cool little drawings that I did. And I scanned them, and then I just was like, and I just wrote up little, little narratives for them all. So like, I kind of turned these old drawings into new story ideas.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's one thing that struck me about you is you're a very creative person. Like when we met and we exchanged business cards, and you had drawn little pictures on all of the business cards that you gave out to people. Like that was a great idea, and you're giving away a little bit of yourself, to everyone you meet, when you do that.
Yeah, everything I do has a little something of like that. For all my mini comics, on the back there's a picture of me, but I leave the t-shirt blank. And so on every single edition, I'll draw a different t-shirt that has to do with like music or my comic or other podcasts or, if I'm making one for a specific person, I'll tailor it to them. I always make these little things and, it's stuff that I've got from Jim Moffood, who's a big influence of mine, and he always, the t-shirts are always different and there's always posters in the background. And, and I talked to him about that one time and he's like, oh, I got that from Jamie Hewlett, and then
Okay.
Jamie Hewlett got it from someone else. So it's, there's always influences that inspire you to do things, but when you turn it into something new, it's really cool.
Cool. So, right. I mean, I don't know. It seems like a lot when you're combining art and music, and you have a day job, of course.
Yeah, I do.
So.
You can call it a day job, but I get done at like midnight, so.
So, I mean, there's a lot going on. I guess it's hard to find the time to do a lot of this stuff, but the podcast is interesting too. Like, I listen to podcasts and they're usually just a conversation like this, but
Right.
yours, you're playing music and then you're talking to people in between. It's kind of like a radio show, mini radio show.
Right.
Was that intentional or is that just kind of like, oh, I just
Yeah, I
want to.
was definitely inspired by like college radio. I did a little bit of college radio when I was going to college in New Hampshire, and then again when I was living in Vermont, I listened to WRUV up there, and that's a lot of what they do there. So I modeled it after that, and because I love music and I love to hear different kinds of music, and I was always that guy growing up that had the CD burner and was burning live bootlegs of bands for people and making mixtapes and stuff. So I love doing that. And so kind of like the new evolution of that for me was doing the podcast. And I just kind of like I said, I get off at midnight, but I stay up till like 3 or 4 in the morning every day working on my stuff, working on the comic, working on the podcast. And last night I was up so late working on my brand new 2-part Les Claypool Primus edition that I slept past our daytime.
Could you explain what that was? I have no idea what you just
Well, I don't, have you guys heard of Les Claypool or Primus, the band?
I've heard of
Oh,
Primus, yeah.
yeah, me too.
Okay, so the most recent Cosmic Line Radio that I've been tirelessly editing the last 2 days is I got to meet this guy named Toaster, who's been to like more Primus shows than anyone. He's got the most tapes and he's got a website up called Toasterland where he streams all these different Primus and Les Claypool bootlegs. So I met up with him and he picked all these little weird songs from the archives. And so this one is kind of like a super exclusive look into the archives of Primus and Les Claypool.
Yeah, that actually brings me to a question. Like, you have a lot of deep cuts on your radio show, or your podcast. How do you come across some of them?
If you saw me right now, you would see that I am putting my fist into the air in exultation because I love that, man. I love deep cuts. I love weird music. I'm just like a music seeker. I'm always like growing up, I was always the guy who like was like, oh, everyone likes this. What do they not like? That's what I want to like. So I always found all the weird music, and I guess growing up, my parents were big into like the Doors and Jimi Hendrix and hippie music, so that started me on the trail of kind of like looking without as well as looking within for music and stuff. I like weird stuff, so it works out because then I bring it to people, and then you know, they're not listening to music on my podcast and being like, oh, you know, that's the album track I heard. It's like, oh man, that was fucking 5395, you know, second set or whatever, you know. It's so I really try to get the deep stuff.
Oh yeah, I think the Fish podcast that you did, I listened to twice so far.
Yes.
There was a lot of great cuts on there, and the hip hop one, that was really just took me by surprise. Some of the songs that were on there.
The most recent hip hop one?
Yes.
Yeah, that was because, you know, I have my hip hop guru, Truce to Head Rush, who is like, you know, he knows everything about hip hop. Mm-hmm. But then the Fish one, that just comes from like, you know, I guess it's almost 15 to 20 years of loving that band. And, you know, I've been seeing them live for over 10 years and I've seen them over 30 times. And like my hard drive is like, you know, there's like 30 gigs of Fish, you know, and my iTunes has like, you know, 3 weeks of Fish. So it's like stupid how much Fish I have.
So with your, you know, this extreme love of music that you have, do you play anything besides the mouth harp?
Yeah, I do. I've been playing drums since I was in about the third grade.
Okay.
And so, you know, I played a lot of hand drums. And back when I was a, you know, pretty big hippie, I played a lot of djembe and in a lot of drum circles and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm proud of it. But, you know, I'll play in little bands here and there and we'll play bars and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm always tapping, and I've been trying to learn guitar to my girlfriend's chagrin, but, you know, I love all instruments, and I try to play, but I never have been able to truly get the music out of my head onto an instrument yet.
So, John, just so you know, when we met earlier this year at a Wizards New York show, and Eli had a mouth harp with him and kept playing it. That's what that reference was.
That was how I was luring in customers.
That's just pure awesome. Awesome. Don't see that's that at cons, true. You know?
I always try to bring something new, you know? People are weary of being lured these days, but I try to lure.
Yeah, but why? Just be yourself. And yeah, if you're going to, and that's pretty cool because if you're walking by a booth and somebody's playing music, you know, you're going to stop.
Yeah.
Sure, that's what it was, music.
Hey.
Now, Greg Horn's art is pretty shocking and pretty awesome as well, but...
Yeah, it kind of sells itself.
Yeah. Oh. Well, sweet. Now, I know I wanted to be on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show with you guys, so maybe we could chat about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's been fun. Too bad you work nights now.
I know, man. I never can do it.
Have you been watching the show?
Yeah, man. I enjoy it very much.
What's been your favorite? Who's been your favorite character so far?
Well, I like, you know, the format of like, it seems like they haven't stuck to this completely, but it's like, you know, they find a new mutant and then it's like the adventures of like finding how they became that way and like, you know, finding them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I liked the doctor who was like their friend and then like fell into the like electric field and then kind of like disappeared. So there's more to come.
Right.
That was really cool. The Thor build up from last week was sweet. I mean, I'm just like, I'm a huge Star Trek fan and I feel like this is Marvel Star Trek because it's like this crew of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, which are like, you know, Starfleet people, and they're cruising around in a ship and, you know, they find trouble and they solve it, you know? So it's like Star Trek, I guess, you know, Firefly's like Star Trek and it's Joss Whedon. So it's like that kind of format, but.
No, that's actually a very good analogy. I haven't heard anyone say that yet, but it actually works. You know, I mean, you've got Coulson, who's kind of like the Captain Kirk of the crew, and you know, May is probably kind of like Spock.
Yeah, or even like a little Worf if you're going Next Generation.
Well, actually, I'd go Tasha Yar myself.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, being a lady, you know.
Well, I meant she's clearly becoming his closest confidant on the on the show, you know.
Ooh, but why did the other guy go into her room at the end of the last episode? Oh,
yeah, we talked about that, and I hope they don't go there. Really,
just leave love out of it. That's how you ruin Thor.
But they have to have something for Natalie Portman to do.
Yeah, that's true. If it was anyone but her, I'd be way more pissed.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things that Whedon wanted to bring to the universe anyway is, you know, at the core of it, he wanted to have the love stories, the connections.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but I mean, you could have, a lot of times you can do a better movie if you leave the love story out. But at the same time, you know, they do that to appeal to a larger audience. So,
yeah, for sure.
Well, it's not just an appeal to a larger audience. It's, I mean, you get so many movies and stuff where, you know, if you do a sequel, you know, they have to explain, well, yes, I got divorced, even though the entire first movie was me finding the love of my life and blah, blah, you know, or we lost the kids somehow, somewhere. And it's nice to see, it makes you able to care more about the characters if they actually have a family life and they have to go through some stuff to, you know, keep that woman that they spent an entire movie, you know, almost dying trying to get.
Yeah, that's true. It kind of shows them as more than just like, you know, a stone statue that can't be hurt. It's like they have a soft side. They have, you know, that gooey underbelly.
Yeah, it's why the series of movies The Mummy works, because it's all about family, and each successive movie has the family part of it. They don't just disappear. And whereas, let's see, what's one where they, Alien. You know, you get Aliens. She spends 3 hours trying to protect the little girl and everything. In the next movie, what happens? Oops, she died.
Oops.
Tragic accident that we retconned in. Right. So, you know, I like the fact that even though they couldn't get Natalie Portman in the Avengers movie,
they like touched on it and stuff.
Yeah, so. She's safe. Okay, good. I can go, you know, take care of this global catastrophe now.
Yeah.
But at least they mentioned her. They cared about it enough.
Yeah, that is a good point.
Yeah. And she got her revenge in the next Thor movie where she just, you know, oh, I can't believe you're back. Swap.
Yeah. And then swap again.
Yeah.
But you know, getting back to agents a little bit, I kind of think in the beginning, when they had the, they seemed like they were going to go down a cookie cutter road at first with the first three episodes, where you were going to have a freak of the week or some weird object, and then they've kind of, you know, the last few episodes they broke away from that, where they teamed up, you know, Ward and Fitz together in an episode to show their personalities, and then in the last episode where you have Ward go through that experience, and now he shares that with May and, you know, give him more personality, because I mean, there was, you know, unfortunately the show got a lot of bad criticism, I think, at first. Yeah. You know, because of the cookie cutter nature it was going down, and, you know, I think it's proof that Marvel listens to their fans, though, the fact that they're mixing it up.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, you know, Star Trek and all these other shows, they stuck to that cookie cutter pretty close, but they still, you know, got through. But this is a new age of TV where, you know, stories are so juicy and there's so much happening, you know, you can't just stick to that cookie cutter. Now, one more thing that I think is super awesome about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is that, you know, we have all these movies and we're building this cinematic universe for Marvel, but it's like, you know, in Superman, the movie, everything got destroyed. The entire town of Smallville got destroyed, and we just never hear about that. But now with S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, Thor can destroy all the stuff, and we can step back with the agents and see how people deal with it, you know. And to go back to Star Trek, there was an episode called Lower Decks where they followed around all these ensigns and, like, you know, a group of young cadets, and they showed how they saw, you know, Picard and Riker and stuff. So it's kind of like with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., can step back and see the Marvel Cinematic Universe almost as normal people, and that's something that's never been done before.
Let's hope it doesn't follow that episode, though, because I believe one of those ensigns died, right?
Yes, they did.
I remember that episode.
Yeah.
That's you know, I think that's true. It's the it's almost like the Everyman. The whole show is the Everyman view of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and you know, just the brilliance of they were in the same library at the beginning of the episode, cleaning up the mess that Thor created. You know, like, yeah, we as humans have to deal with this mess that these superheroes are creating. You know, you're right. It's a great view into the world, and yeah, hopefully they keep it going. You know, I think that's one of the reasons for the criticism too, is that people were expecting a superhero show.
Right.
They were expecting a Thor or Captain America every week, and it's like, no, it's like, we're telling the story of everybody else.
Yeah. And they haven't even, you know, committed to say that they have a mutant on the team. Now, I feel like maybe somebody's hiding something that we might get to later, but, you really? Know, there's no mutant on the team. There's no.
Ooh, so who would you think it is?
Well, now I know Coulson's hiding something. He wasn't in Tahiti.
Right.
You know, brainwashed. Now, I don't know if the Vision rumors are true or whatever. I don't want to go there yet, but, you know. Now that those guys handled the Berserker staff, you know, you never know. He said it could last for up to 10 years, so maybe sometimes they're going to be like, oh, Berserker Rage, you know, and do something, but.
That would be interesting, although that would be kind of Hulkish.
That would be. Yeah. Well, we don't have to necessarily have that sound effect. You know, they could.
No, we'd like, have Coulson. To have the sound effect.
Yeah. Coulson smash!
Coulson smash!
Oh, God. Do not anger the Coulson.
Oh, man. That would be interesting. How's that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. I'm psyched for the implications and for it to grow and become more, you know. I hope it lasts more than one season because.
No, I think it will. I also think they're, like you were just saying, the implications, like they're not going to have an episode where something happens and they just ignore it. I really think they'll keep things, storylines going. At least I hope so. Right. You know, I'm so tired of the TV mantra of we don't worry about continuity, you know?
Yeah. And I think the Marvel Universe is so steeped in continuity and they're really doing well to stick with it, you know?
Right.
Forgetting any movies that came before Iron Man 1, I guess, though.
Well, that's true. But, you know.
Although the 1994 Fantastic Four was amazing, I think that Johnny Storm would have used his fire a little bit before the final battle.
Well, that was
how many
the thing
people have even seen that?
I don't know. Probably none.
If I did.
You did? Yeah, I watched it on VHS too. It was
terrible.
I read an article on it where the reason he doesn't use his fire until the end is because that's where they spent most of their special effects budget, was on that scene.
Yeah, I read that too.
I heard the rest of it went. Too. The rest of it went to the Thing's costume.
Yes,
yeah, that's it, and no money for script at all.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Hey, let's talk about other terrible old Marvel movies like the Generation X TV show. Did you ever see that?
Oh my god, I remember that. Yeah.
Matt Frewer as some new villain, and
that didn't last long though.
No, it was only a TV movie once, and then it didn't get picked up. Yeah, I was a big Generation X fan because I was like, "Hey, I'm young too. Maybe I can be." I always loved it.
Did you guys ever see the David Hasselhoff Nick Fury movie?
Oh,
I did not.
I kept my eyes closed.
That's really bad. as good as you would hope that would be, it was. Let's put it that way.
Well, no, Dolph Lundgren's The Punisher is right down there, I think.
Yep. Well, I don't know if you saw Conan whenever the first Captain America came out. But they're like, oh, we have secret footage from the new Captain America movie. And it'd be like, I think it was like the 80s Captain America where he had a motorcycle helmet as his helmet was riding like a dirt bike around.
Do you remember the Captain America movie from the 90s?
I didn't see it, and I don't know if that's what I'm talking about from Conan or not, but...
No. There was an 80s or like late 70s, early 80s made-for-TV movie that they did where he rode around on a motorcycle. His shield became the windshield on the motorcycle, and he could take it out.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, you know, when I was a kid, it was cool, but looking back on it, it was really bad. It was nothing like, you know, he wasn't Steve. I don't even think he was Steve Rogers in the show. He was somebody else. Just like, you know, it wasn't Bruce Banner. It was David Banner in the Incredible Hulk TV series. And but I remember it was so funny because I always remember this was it might have been Batman Returns or some movie like that. I saw in the theater and they had a teaser trailer come on for Captain America.
Wow.
Where it was just, you saw the shield just fly by the screen and then it had a date. And it was just that simple. And for years I kept going, where's the Captain America movie? Where's the Captain America movie? And then, you know, I was at a con and I found it on DVD and I bought it and I watched it and I went, well, I'm so glad this never made it to the theater.
You spent the rest of the day crying over a bottle of scotch, right?
Well, they tried to fit the whole thing, the whole story, into, you know, an hour and a half, basically. It was because I don't think it was 2 hours, you know, where he fights the Red Skull and then he gets frozen and then gets awoken in modern time. And
wow.
Yeah.
That's too much to pack in one movie.
Yes. Actually, I'm glad they realized when they redid it this time around.
We're so glad that they are doing some quality stuff these days.
Yes, you've heard the news about the deal they made with Netflix, right?
Yeah, that is exciting.
Yeah.
I'm excited to have Daredevil back because, you know, I've been reading a lot more comics recently. I kind of hadn't been reading, like, you know, a weekly or a monthly series for quite a while because there wasn't a nice store locally, whatever, but now there's a humongous store locally and I've been going and getting, you know, and following stuff, and the recent Daredevil is actually killing it. And there's this artist Somni, I think his name is.
Okay.
I'm looking at it right now. It's Chris Somni, if that's how you pronounce it. But he has this really awesome style that's kind of like, you know, a little bit of the old and a little bit of the new, kind of like Mike Allred style.
Okay.
But he's really really cool. I'm a huge Silver Surfer fan. I'm like, he's my favorite. And so they had a little crossover and it's just really cool. So I'm psyched about the Daredevil for Netflix, kind of like getting that franchise back.
Right. You
know, harkening back to our last conversation. I don't know. I wasn't fully sold on the Ben Affleck movie yet.
Yeah. I don't think many people were.
Yeah. In fact, I think the scene in the park where they're dance battling is one of the worst fights in any movie of all time.
I know people that actually liked that scene too.
I kind of liked that scene.
Okay,
I think the rest of the movie really sucked, and the way they did the Kingpin was just wrong.
But I wondered, did you like the scene because you like Jennifer Garner, or did you like the scene because, you know?
I refuse to answer that question in that it may incriminate me.
I guess it's cool that that movie, you know, introduced them to, and now they're married. That's a cool thing from that movie.
True.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, outside of the movie, I don't mean Matt Murdock. And you know, they're pretty close in the comics, you know. They're lovers.
Yes. Actually, Kevin Smith talked about it a little bit, too, when one of the things, you know, in Hollywood, they say that that kind of hurt Ben Affleck at the time was the whole Jennifer Lopez thing.
Yeah, the Bennifer thing.
Yeah, the whole Bennifer thing, because, like, after they broke up, you know, that's when they did Jersey Girl, like, right after they broke up.
I love Jersey Girl. I mean, you can chastise me all you want, but I like that movie.
Well,
hey, you know what? I'll tell you why. Any movie that is about a father and a son, because I love my dad so much, it gets me. Like, I will cry at any movie that is like a father and a son type thing, or a daughter and a son, or even the Ben Affleck, you know, George Carlin relationship, you know, that gets me. I'm tearing up over here just thinking about it.
Yeah, but that was one of the things, like, a lot of people in Hollywood, number one, when they went to do the movie, they a lot of people, and even Affleck was like, they wanted to kill her off right away. They didn't even want her in the movie as much as she was.
Yeah.
You know, and let's just start the movie that...
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Let's just start the movie that the mother's dead. You know, it was basically how they approached it. And he's like, no, that's not how I wrote it, blah, blah. And then when the movie did bad, a lot of the Hollywood people were like, see?
Yeah.
People are still reeling about the whole Bennifer thing. And, you know, they try to point to that for some of the reasons why Daredevil didn't do as well. But I think a lot of it was script.
Yeah, I think so too. But you know, I'm positive and optimistic for the new stuff. And you know what finally strikes me is that I think part of that deal was that some comic book writers are helping write it. You know, and that's something I always didn't understand. I was like, why don't you just get the comic writers to help you write the movie? You know, they're always trying to get these, you know, different movie writers to write a movie. You know, just get the guys, get the boys to write them, you know?
Yeah, I think it wasn't until Jeff Loeb is one of the big ones where he was a screenwriter, then he went and wrote comics, and then he went back to writing stuff, and he wrote episodes of Smallville and whatnot. So, you know, it was people like him that made the industries go, hey, you know what? The guys who write the comics can also write movies.
Yeah. I remember that J. Michael Straczynski.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, one of my favorites.
Really? He wrote for the Ghostbusters cartoon in the 80s. Did you know that?
He wrote for Captain Power too.
Oh, that's so cool! Like, I loved him as comics too, and then I like went back and watched some old Ghostbusters. I was like, wait a second, J. Michael Straczynski? That's so. Yeah. And he did Babylon 5 too, or something, right?
Yeah, and yes. he did a lot. He like the Captain Power series. It only lasted one season, but the first half of the season is like just for selling toys and stuff. And then he took over as writer, and at the last episode, he killed off one of the main characters. He turned it into an incredible storyline, and then they killed it because, you know, he was supposed to be selling toys and not making an actual story. So, and yeah, and I remember the real Ghostbusters too. I mean, he's been all over the place. And of course, Babylon 5.
Yeah. That is awesome. It's so cool how, you know, the guys are doing it, and they're crossing over and back and forth and stuff. It's sweet.
And yeah. I mean, I've told this story on the podcast before, but, it always takes me back when I hear the, story when, Kevin Smith got asked to write the Superman Lives movie that was never made, thank God. They asked him, and he, you know, he's like, sure, I'll do it, I'm flattered. But he turns around to and points at the publishing office and goes to the Warner Brothers guys, you have all those writers over there that know this character way better than I do.
Right.
Why don't you have them write the Superman movie? It would make more sense. And their reply was, oh, well, they're the comic book people, and we're the movie people, and we're separate, you know. And that just blew my mind that, you know, they thought that way. Even then, you know, we had the 89 Batman that did so well, but and really started the whole genre back up at that time. But it could have been so much better if they had just gotten input from, you know, the writers at the time.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like sometimes the comic book writers weave these like intricate yarns too. And so sometimes it's hard to crush these magical stories that, you know, that we love in graphic novel format, or we loved in comic. It's you can't like crush them down for one movie. And until recently, it wasn't like, oh, we're going to make like two or three movies so we can have one giant, you know, thing. We need a quick little story that, you know, a comic book writer could map out on one piece of paper, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we don't need this giant treatise about, you know, Silver Surfer's inner monologue for 10 pages.
Right, right. Well, even look at look at when they did Dark Knight Returns, and they did it as a cartoon. You know, they cut out all that inner monologue, but they still made it work. You know.
Yeah, I like that. This part two kills it. Part two, I was like out of breath by the time it was over.
Yes.
That was sweet.
Can you hold on for 1 second?
Yeah.
Go see what your mother wants. Sorry, my wife was calling my cell phone. I'm in my office and she's in the bedroom and she probably wants something, but she doesn't know I'm recording.
Alright. That's all good. My dad used to always tell me when I would come do stuff like that, he'd be like, go tell your mother she wants you.
All right. So anyway. back
to you. Want to jump? I don't know. Can I talk about my comic now?
Yes. Yes, please. Yeah, we've been talking comics. Now let's talk about your comic.
All right. Well, now I'm only one issue in, but that doesn't mean that I don't have a giant story mapped out in my head. But I put out this comic called Monkey Lion. Now, the reason I named it Monkey Lion was when I wrote it a long time ago is, you know, Cosmic Lion. And I always liked monkeys and drawing them. So when you smush those two together, right in the middle, you get Eli. Monkelion, so it's a pretty lame reason that I thought of it, but it lends itself really good to what the story becomes, and it's more about my collision and love of live music and comics. Now, I also tour managed a band called Roots of Creation. They're a reggae funk dubtronica hybrid from the mountains of New Hampshire. You can tell
that's a mouthful.
So my comic is about an intergalactic touring Afro-synth duo. Make sure you got all that. Afro-synth. But, you know, so the thing about them is they travel around, you know, in a starship that's fueled by music, which is, you know, at the center of the starship is the rhythm drive, which is like this amazing invention that Lion, the main character, invented, which is basically like a hybrid between the warp drive from Star Trek. And I don't know if you've ever listened to Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, but Keith Emerson, the keyboard player, has this thing that he calls the Monster Moog, which is this giant keyboard with all these knobs and cables and stuff. And so it's kind of a mixture of those two things. So you kind of get a cool, you know, I see it like as a cartoon in my head. So you get this kind of like circular giant keyboard warp drive, and there's this shadowy Phantom of the Opera figure at the base, like playing these crazy things to fuel the ship, you know. And so then the stories all revolve around their tour and different members. And episode two, actually the first comic takes place the day before their final concert. Okay. And I did that because I didn't want to like waste too much time like setting up the story. I kind of wanted to just like get into it and, you know, make the reader feel like they kind of came in to something that was already super developed. And then the next one takes place like maybe 20 years earlier when they're like at the peak of their popularity and they're playing a giant music festival on this planet. And, you know, so it's going to be really cool. I just got to get back into writing it. And that's why I started doing the mini comics to get my like brain juices, you know, going so I can get the second issue written and drawn.
Yeah, no, that's, I thought that was a really cool concept. You shared the first issue with me when we met, and right. And it's kind of cool because when you begin the story kind of at the end, you know, you're free to go back and tell any story you want. You know,
exactly.
I mean, of course, people are going to say, "Well, you have to get to that point," you know, but
hey, I'm there in my head, man. You know, like what I wanted to attack it as is kind of, I don't know if you read a lot of Ninja Turtles, but, you know, like they had the Ninja Turtles comics, but then they had, you know, and they had the continuity in the Ninja Turtles actual book, mm-hmm. but then they had the Tales of TMNT, and those stories kind of took place in different places all throughout the timeline, you know, and they could just tell that story whenever. And so that's kind of the approach that I had to it. And actually, I was super honored to have Jim Lawson, who was one of the original inkers for Eastman and Laird. And then he went on to start drawing, and he drew like the whole Battle for New York or Battle of New York storyline and all mm-hmm. that stuff. And he did a pinup for my comic. I just wrote to him, and he was like, yeah, I'll do it. I'm like, what? Cool. Are you kidding me?
Very nice.
Yeah, it was so cool, you know.
Good get.
Yeah. And that's just something I've learned doing the podcast is if you don't write to someone, you don't know if they're going to do it or not. And I've actually been surprised that some people that said yes, like Jim Mawfood, was just like, yeah, sure, man, I'll do it.
Oh, yeah. No, I have definitely learned that, too. It's like,
yeah,
you can't sit there and assume they're never going to do it. Just ask them and see what they say. You know,
although Dave, sometimes when they say no very emphatically,
actually,
as we found out,
you know what, since you're on the show,
yeah,
and you were there for the story.
Oh, he was there.
He was. Yes, that was the weekend that I met him.
Oh, OK.
That was the Will Wheaton story. Is that what we're talking about?
OK, well, there you go. I was going to say we tried to make it a contest on the show where I told the story without saying who it was.
Oh,
and I wanted to see if people would write in and guess, and they were going to get a free T-shirt. The winner would get a T-shirt, but no one. I had like three guesses, and they were all horrible. So I guess we can officially say the contest is over,
and Eli wins the T-shirt. All
right. Since Eli,
you were there.
Yeah, you're right.
That's not cheating at all.
So for those who don't know, I guess I could tell the story again.
The quick version.
Yeah, the quick version. So we were at Wizard World New York.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think who I might want to ask to be on the podcast. And I went over and asked, and I haven't had these people on yet either, which is driving me nuts because schedules haven't worked out, but I asked a couple of different artists. I won't say who they are because I don't want to embarrass anyone. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll do it. You know, it was great. And then I was like, you know, somebody I would really want is Will Wheaton. And he happened to be at that show. So I go over and I ask his assistant because he wasn't at the table. And she even said, oh, yeah, sure, he'll do it. He loves doing that kind of stuff. And the next day I go over, get in the line. I walk up to him and, you know, like I asked her first, do you think I should ask him? And she goes, just like that, like really scared. And I'm like, is it not a good idea? And she's like, no, you can ask him if you want.
Oh, if you want.
Here. Yeah. That if you want was like, made me go, is this a good idea?
But go ahead and eat the lines then. Here's a steak. It'll protect you.
But me being a glutton for punishment, I went up and, you know, I shook his hand. Or actually, no, he wouldn't even shake my hand. He gave me a fist bump where I did see him shake other people's hand, which made me leery as well. But we did the fist bump. I told him I was a fan. And then I said, oh, would you consider being on my podcast? And he goes, let me think about that. Yeah, no.
Whoa.
Just like that. And I thought, okay, well, all right, fine. I'll just gather my pride and walk away. And he keeps going like, oh, I don't have a lot of free time and I'd rather spend my free time playing with my pets than being on your podcast. So it's just like, you know,
a simple no would have sufficed.
Yes, exactly. And it was so disheartening coming from a guy who has a national Don't Be a Dick Day.
Yeah.
All about, you know, being nice to people and don't be a dick and blah, blah. And that was like the most dickish thing you could do.
I'd rather play with my... He has a day, so he's a dick all the other days.
Oh, yeah. That's it.
I still don't get it because I've heard good things about him. So I don't understand why he would have said something like that.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense.
You know, and the thing was, I made a when I met him, I made a reference to the one of the Big Bang Theory episodes he was on, when I said I'm a big fan of poorly executed beards, because that was one of the jokes on the episode. And he laughed at that, and he made a comment about it, so I figured, oh, I'm in, you know? Like, he enjoyed the reference, but no.
Groundwork not successfully laid.
Exactly.
But then another funny thing about that weekend, too, is we were working together and both battling each other to try to convince Greg Horn to be on our respective podcasts. And and then the last day we both wore our our podcast t-shirts and we were like telling the fans like, oh, hey, I have a podcast. You should check it out. Oh, no. I have a podcast. that was pretty funny. A coincidence.
Yes. So
that's awesome.
And now the fusion of two worlds comes together on Superhero Speak.
Have you convinced him yet?
I haven't. No. He told me one time that if I came to his house that he would do it. So like maybe I have to plan a trip over there.
Okay.
But not yet. I've brought my gear like to cons that I've worked with him and he said, "Oh yeah, we'll definitely do it," but like there's no time, you know. It's really like you get done at 11 and then he gives you a steak and then it's like
that, exactly. That's over. that's what it is. He feeds you and you're tired and you go to sleep and you forget.
Yeah.
You got to love him.
Yeah, I do love Greg. I'm thankful that he came into my life and thankful that the kind of circumstances and coincidences that led me to his loving embrace.
All right, now that's just weird.
Well, Greg, if you're listening.
Yes, Greg, if you're listening.
I want to be in your loving embrace.
Just ignore that and come on this show.
Oh, great.
So, yes. I just can't get that image out of my head.
Greg and I spooning and yes. Talking about comics. Remember that episode of Next Generation, Eli? It was amazing, Greg.
You know, the funny thing is that we haven't even posted this yet because we're in the middle of recording it. And I'm already getting emails from Greg saying, stop it now. Just stop.
Oh, yeah, because John worked for Greg, too. So, see, we all have that in common.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. So this is a Greg Horn triumvirate.
Yes. Greg Horn Appreciation Society.
It's the Greg Horn Love Circle.
Yeah,
he is what?
Awesome. He's so damn talented, and it's really easy to work for him at those cons because, like you said earlier, his art just flies off the shelves, man. It sells itself.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's funny because it's – I've said this. It's the easiest and hardest job you can have at a con where you don't have to worry about the salesmanship as much, but you're constantly talking to people and constantly making sales. You know, you work from the moment the doors open till the doors close.
Yeah, I love that too. And if you're always working, if you're at a con when Greg's at, because we went to a con a couple weeks, I guess a few months ago, and Greg was there and, you know, I wasn't working for him, but as soon as I saw him, he wasn't like, "Hey, buddy, what's going on?" He was like, "Eli, actually, can you come watch the booth real quick because my guy's got to go to the hotel and, like, get some." I was like, "Absolutely, man. No problem." And then I kind of, like, went back into my thing. All right. One for 20, two for 30. And then you get your sales pants on there.
No, that actually happened and at New York Comic Con as well. The guy who I would say he was an Uber fan of yeah. Greg's. He, you know, Greg's like, "Can you help out?"
"Hey, let me get your love behind the thing here. Show you how the sausage gets made."
Yes.
I'll tell you what's really cool, man, too, about him is, you know, when you look at his art, too, he does the computer coloring and the computer painting and everything, mm-hmm. and they're so brilliant and realistic. But then when you see him sketch or when you see him do, you know, a fan sketch for someone, it's like it almost still has all that detail and color. It's like I love watching him sketch, man. When I was working in New York with you guys that one time, mm-hmm. I watched him do a couple sketches, and, you know, I'm an artist too, so, like, after the show, I went back and went to a bar by my hotel and just sat there for hours, like, not hours, probably like an hour, but I was like, here's how he was drawing eyes. And I like drew like 50 eyes in his style. And then I tried to like draw White Queen's face like he does. And like, man, I just like tried to do it, but he makes it look so easy. It's just a couple lines, but all of a sudden it's this insanely sexy White Queen. And you're like, what the?
Yeah, no, it's any artist like that. Right away, it's like you were just a, you know, you love watching them just work. You know, yeah. I love watching Greg draw because it's like it seems so effortless. You know, I draw a line here, a line here, a line here, and then boom, there's yeah. this amazing Batman picture. And it's like, how did you do that?
Yeah. And, you know, that makes it all that makes his notoriety and his, you know, all his work validated because, you know, he really is that talented and, you know, he really is. You know, as big a draw as a cover artist as your other, like, Alex Rosses and stuff, you know? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, definitely. All right. So back to the comic book.
Oh, right.
So you have issue one out, then you have two mini comics out.
I do. And actually, I mean, I have a lot of backlog, too. Like I was telling you, when I had my live music events up in Burlington, Vermont, mm-hmm. I would make these comics just myself where I'd go to Kinko's, you know, and I'd print them out on front and backs of 8.5 by 11 papers. And I'd make, you know, 15 and I'd sell them all at the concert. And I just like, I don't have any, I didn't save a copy for myself, you know? So like, I have these different comics that I put out that I don't even, you know, have in my collection because I was, you know, I just wanted to sell them and I wasn't really thinking about posterity. But actually, I put out my very first comic in third grade.
Third grade? What was really? It?
It was about Star Trek. And I created Tuvok before Tuvok was even around because we had a character called Tuspok.
Okay.
And that was because, like, he's the second Spock, but he was, like, different. And so we're like, oh, Tuspok. And then Tuvok came out, and we're like, yo, you cramping on our style, this third grade comic book, son?
Well, maybe you should send a copy of that to Paramount and say, hey, where's my money?
Dude, it really makes me sad because I don't know where it is.
Aww.
I don't know where that – but I did create a character probably in about fifth grade called Jester Man, and he was my big character growing up, and he was like my alter ego. So when I created him in fifth grade, I wore a like a flannel shirt, you know, like a 90s flannel shirt. I mm-hmm. tied that around my body so it looked like overalls or something.
Yes.
And I would run around and just try to make like my parents' friends laugh. And so like that's where it started. I bought this Jester hat at like a ski swap or some, you know, where I was mm-hmm. buying like ski gear. And then I just started running around the house trying to make everyone laugh. And so then I made my first comic about that, and that I still have. And then that character kind of grew with me to the point of where when I was in high school, you know, and I had dreads and I loved going to fish shows, that Jester Man would cook grilled cheese in the parking lot of fish shows and then go fight, you know, evil hippies and stuff. But I did that. I did one called Grammar Guys that I tried to be like an educational one about these guys that could transform into a period, a semicolon, and a colon, and then they would beat up people in those crazy forms.
That's good.
Yeah. And so, you know, I've been writing comics forever. It's all I've ever like really wanted to do.
What makes a hippie evil?
You know, selling bad mm-hmm. drugs or selling fake drugs. Or, you know, just trying to use people. There's these, I don't know, because I did spend a lot of time, you know, in the fish lots and stuff. So, you know, anything that's not super positive, bro. What are okay. you making fun of last night's set? Wha-bam! Grilled cheese of hate in your face.
Let's see. Now there you go. You should ask Greg to do a cover for you.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, I mean, I always have my feelers out because I always love that about comics when they have pinups in the back, you know. So I did ask Greg, I asked Jim Mahfood, and I actually made contact with Mike Allred over Twitter because I started posting these pictures of my Madman action figure in like weird precarious positions or like riding our cat around and stuff, and he retweeted me like two or three times with these photos, and so I was like, oh damn, I might as well ask him to be on the podcast. And he was like, yeah, ask me again in January because then I'll have a lot to talk about or something. So and cool. He's doing the new Silver Surfer comic that comes out in March. I'm so psyched about.
So you have a lot to talk about with him.
Yeah, man, that'd be so awesome if he'd do it.
Cool. So, that brings me to another question too. Like, how would you do a podcast like that with the work in the music with interviewing, you know, an artist about Silver Surfer?
Well, it would be a little bit harder. Now, when I interviewed Jim Mahfood, it was a lot easier, you know, because he does the BP sessions and all of his comics have like soundtracks and records and, you know, music is steeped pretty deeply in his. But I think what I would do with Mike Allred is I would ask him what kind of music he listens to. And I like to do that for my guests that are more music based. Right. Now, when I had Marilyn Gugliotti from Clerks on the podcast, I asked her that, and she said she doesn't listen to any music. So that was a little bit harder. You know, I got her to tell me a song, and I played it, and then I played stuff from the Clerks soundtrack and stuff like that. Okay. And then, you know, but I would probably ask Mike Allred, you know, work it into conversation, like, when you're drawing, do you listen to music? Or what music do you listen to kind of, like, help you, you know, create ideas or these kind of things, so... Kind of, I like to find out, because music is so important to me, I like to find out where and what kind of part music plays in their life and in their creative process. So,
yeah, I always find that strange. I mean, maybe because I'm a musician as well, and music is a big part of my life, but when people say they don't listen to music, I'm like, really? Never? Like, you go to a wedding and a song comes on, you don't go, oh, I like that. Ever, you know?
Yeah. Well, I feel like maybe people who say they don't listen to music, it's like if someone listens to no music at all, they're missing a huge part of life. But maybe when they say they like, when I say pick a song, they can't because they just like listen to the radio and they're not like, see, I'm fanatic about music. Like if someone said, you know, who's your favorite band? I'd be like, oh my God. I mean, what does one base their answer on? Physical prowess, you know, keen detection skills. Mallrats. Just kidding. But you know, like, you know, I would have a million answers, but that's only because I'm like fanatical about music. So I guess, you know, someone says, oh, I listen to the radio. It's like, at least you're listening to something.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, the radio makes it hard because, you know, more than half of this stuff is owned by Clear Channel and they have the same 50 songs on every freaking channel. So,
yeah, that is upsetting.
Yeah.
And that is why people should be listening to Cosmic Lionhead Radio.
Absolutely.
They can hear the deep cuts and they can hear some really good music.
And exactly. Very new stuff that's not pre-canned by some executive.
Exactly. I almost will never play radio cuts. Now, I will say that my girlfriend has kind of opened me up to some pop stuff because I would never – I never listen to like modern stuff. You know, it's always like – you know, I'd rather – if I'm by myself, I'm going to listen to something weird, you know, like Miles Davis or Praxis or Primus or something like that. But, you know, she's opened me up to some pop songs and I'll find myself singing – like Royals by Lord. Have you heard that?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Love that. I love it. It's great. I never seen a diamond in the flame.
Yeah. Dave and I have actually knew somebody, a friend of ours at work that actually introduced me to Lord. And she loved it because the lyrics were intelligent and interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
Not the same refrain over and over again.
That's true.
Yeah, it's not just like, I came in like a wrecking ball. You see my balls. No, it's not that.
No, 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 please no. No, no, no Miley Cyrus.
No, that's the closest it'll ever come on this podcast to Miley Cyrus.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I know the words to it, so.
So something. Now we're all very sad.
Yeah. No, no. And you know what? It depends. I mean, if you get something like, all right, so I like Party in the USA by Miley Cyrus, right? Yeah. But it's even better when you get something like the cast of Pitch Perfect to sing it, which makes it sound super, I mean, just unbelievable.
Right.
Yeah. You know, if you could get everything to sound like that, pop wouldn't have such a bad name.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not always necessarily like these people want to put out these type of songs, you know, because I watched a thing of Miley Cyrus, you know, it was something that she did in her backyard or something. And she was singing, old Dolly Parton songs and stuff like that. And she sounded really good. And it was like, okay, this is, you know, this person actually has talent, but because of, you know, maybe contracts and all these different things, it's like they're forced to be this pop star and play these different things. You know, I'm not saying that she doesn't love fame.
Oh, no,
you know, they have talent.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, Christina Aguilera had that problem in the beginning. They were trying to make her another Britney Spears, and Christina was really into, you know, I guess like deep, what was it, deep jazz or something, or she didn't like what they were making her sing.
Right. And now she called all of her fans assholes because they made her cancel her tour. I don't know if you saw that, but something about her fans were exhausted, and so they canceled the rest of her tour. And she's like, man, I was looking forward to playing a show on my birthday. My fans are dicks.
Something like that. I did not hear about that.
No.
You should check. I think the story was on Rolling Stone or something. But
it's a shame because she's one of the few that actually has real talent.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's just the problem with pop music in general is that it's record companies trying to make music that will be popular.
Yes.
As opposed, they're trying to control the trend as opposed to just, you know, creating a trend. And, you know, and a horrible example, you take something like What Does the Fox Say, which is a song that was written as a total joke, becomes this big phenomenon, you know, and it's almost like, is that going to be, you know, the next stream of pop music?
Yeah, and I think it is, man, because these little one-offs, you know, it's kind of like in the 60s where there were so many one-hit wonders because these songs had these, you know, weird little hooks or like a red rubber ball, bing, you know, like these little things that just are hooks, like What Did the Fox Say or Psy, you know, Gangnam Style. It's just that's all you need is like just that one little hook, and you know, you don't need talent, you don't need anything.
But one hit wonders are fine because you know, the way the record executives are, you won't even get those anymore. They just, you know, because they'll create a boy band and unleash them on us, and you know, we're all very sad. And I'm just tired of, yeah. You know, I've been to very few concerts. Okay, and the last one was, and I hate to say it, Taylor Swift. But you know what? Without the guy in the back pressing the auto-tune button, she sounds good. You know?
Yeah.
It's nice. Yeah, it's nice to do that. Like the guys from Train, if you listen to them live and they're horrible unless you've got somebody sitting there with, you know, with the auto-tune button and anything from Disney and all. I just it's like you if you want to be popular these days, you have to look hot and you have to have an executive in your corner, and that's it. You don't need talent, you don't need to be able to write songs, you know, but in the 60s and 70s you got real music and all different types of experimental music because you'd get people walking up to radio stations and say, here's my track, play it sometime, and you know, if the radio guy had nothing else to do, he'd play your track and hey, you got airtime. You know, it didn't matter, they tried everything, and it turned out some of the best music that we've ever really had up until now.
Right. And back then it was kind of like people were revolting against something and there was all this consciousness around. And so that brewed all this stuff. But now it's actually like the man won or whatever. And so that all the pop stars or people who are trying to do that thing, they're like, we've already lost. So let me just buy in, or let me do what I need to do for money. I'm not trying to start a revolution with my music, or, you know, you're not going to use my song as like a rallying cry for the, you know, underachieving masses. It's just like, I came in like a wrecking ball.
No. You really don't like that song, do you?
I actually do, but it's just like, it's, you know, an easy statement of like the new songs that kind of suck. You know, it's catchy, but it's not, you know, it's got no substance. Now, here's one thing I will say. Justin Bieber, who is the, you know, scapegoat, and he is, you know, a complete asshole. I'm not going to lie. But, you know, I saw a funny meme online that said he canceled a tour, or he canceled a show in somewhere because he had a stomach ache. And then right below it, they showed a picture of Dio, and he's like rocked a 100,000 person venue with terminal liver cancer. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, this kid's a little. But actually, Justin Bieber's guitar player is a guy who's like a huge Grateful Dead and huge Fish fan, and, you know, loves to see Fish, and like will play Fish songs at Justin Bieber concerts, and no one even knows. And so, like, it's kind of cool that, for me as an underground music fan who loves, you know, this kind of counterculture of Fish, that, like, you know, the pinnacle of bubblegum can have this guitar player who is actually steeped in really good music. And it was kind of like, he took Justin Bieber to see Fish, you know, Justin Bieber's seen Fish a few times. And so, like, sometimes behind these, you know, villainous music characters, there can be some, you know, some good.
Well, it's one of the byproducts of becoming famous like he did. One of the good byproducts is that he gets surrounded by musicians that the record company puts him with to say, okay, you're going on tour, you need a band. They find this really good guitar player, and you're not going to be a talented guitar player and not listen to, you know, Fish or, you know, let's say Queen or Metallica or the Beatles or any, you know, any band that has talent. You know, they're going to influence a talented musician, not a cute kid who can sing, you know?
So yeah, I'd like to, like, really ask, you know, Justin Bieber, like, who do you listen to? Like, when you're chilling, like, are you listening to Usher, you know, or are you going home and listening to, like, Fish show or like Return to Forever to be like, oh, my God, it's blowing my mind.
And he's going to be like, I think his answer would be, I listen to myself because I'm so swag.
He's listening to Kidz Bop.
Yeah. Who covers my song? Make me a mix CD of people covering my music. I want to hear.
We're a little over an hour here. So, where can people find you online?
Well, the podcast, well, everything is housed at CosmicLionProductions.com. I know that's a long URL, but CosmicLionProductions.com, CosmicLionRadio.libsyn.com is where the podcast is. You can just search Google Cosmic Lion Radio. I'm on iTunes, and, you know, I'm out there. Cosmic Lion Productions on Facebook. I look forward to talking with any of your fans that enjoyed listening, and it's a real honor to be asked to be the interviewee on a podcast, because, you know, I do so many podcasts myself, and so I'm really thankful that you asked me, David. It's an honor, man.
Oh, no problem. It was fun catching up and having this conversation. You know, I have a lot of friends from the convention scene, and I'm kind of starting to realize that the only way I'm going to catch up with them is having them on my podcast.
Yeah, it's a good way, man. And I'm sure I'll see you at a New York con or something coming up in the future.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure I'll be getting emails soon about upcoming shows and where can I help out.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he's doing
so actually. So do you guys play any music on your podcasts?
No, it's just what we'll do is if it's like the Thor special, we'll have we'll take some music from the movie and put it in. Or if we take Like it's the same thing with Iron Man, or the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. one. We do the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. theme, but we just have a stupid theme song that I wrote that plays at the beginning. But other than
that, it's not
that's
stupid.
That's because you turned down my ABBA remix. That's, you know.
Well, and if you want me to send you a song or something like that, so you can have.
I was gonna say, if you have something you want me to include, we can clip it on the end here.
All right. Well, I'll play a song called "Hideous Mutant Freaks."
All right, then.
It's got some George Clinton. It's got some Bill Laswell.
Okay, cool, Clinton. That should be good. All right, then.
All right, man. Thanks again for having me.
Oh, thanks for doing it. And on that note, everyone, as always, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Hideous mutant freaks. Hideous mutant freaks.
You never wanna, but you're gonna be the freak of the week. You never wanna, but you're gonna be the freak of the week. You never wanna, but you're gonna be the freak of the week. You never wanna, but you're gonna be the freak of the week.
Hideous mutant freaks. Looking, you're cute. A young American movie star. Shooting star you are. Ricky Coogan, you sure are going far. It was not in your plan. What happened in Santa Fe?
Freak. Mutant freak, he was turned into a freak.
Get ready for the glam and the glitz. Get ready, get ready for the glam and the glitz. Showtime, showtime. Get ready for the glam and the glitz. Get ready for the glam and the glitz. Are you ready for the
Bodilio Dance Time?
We never wanted to be turned into the freak of the week.
You never wanted to be turned into the freak of the week.
Upon you, weird and ugly. How can all of this be possible, physically and mentally? I can't take it any longer. Why am I a freak?
Freaks. It is good and free. Freaking out with
a freaky dicky you don't wanna be freaking out with.
The kind of freak that you don't wanna be freaking out with.
The kind of freak that you don't wanna be freaking out with.
Freaky dicky you don't wanna be freaking out with at all.
Freaky dicky you don't wanna be freaking out with.
The kind of freak that you don't wanna be freaking out for the freaking.
Not at all, mama.
Freaks. Hideous mutant freak.
He's a monster.
Freaks. Hideous mutant freak.
He's a harvest
freak. Hideous mutant freak.
You never wanna, but you're gonna be the freak of the week. You never wanna, but you're gonna be the freak of the week. Freaks. Hideous mutant freaks. Freaks. Hideous mutant freaks.
Ooh.
Freaks.
Not the kind of freak you wanna be freaking out.
Hideous mutant freaks. Freaks.
Yes, he is.
Hideous mutant freaks. Freaks.
Not the kind of freak you wanna be freaking out.
Hideous mutant freaks.
Freaky diggy, not the kind of friend you wanna be freaking out with.